last week as part of the opening ceremony. I was able to record that at the opening ceremony. She made a presentation to a presentation to the attendees, and then followed up with that wonderful, wonderful song. Thank you to Vivian for the interview. That was really nice. Quite a moving interview. Eleni Soboslam, the exhibition, which is entitled, let me just make sure I read it properly, The Children Have to Hear Another Story, runs until August 7th at the Vancouver Art Gallery, and I hope you can make it out there. We have, next up is Looking at Lyme with Dr. Annie Hopper, and talking about how neuroplasticity can help people heal from brain injuries.
When animals are threatened with danger, the limbic system plays a vital role in keeping us alive. When the limbic system is impaired, a cascade of problems can arise, leading to symptoms that can manifest as chronic illness. So how would one go about healing? I have found an amazing expert to answer our questions. I love people with curious minds, and Annie Hopper is most definitely one of them. Her determination led to the creation of the Dynamic Neural Retraining System, or DNRS. She's also the author of Wired for Healing, Remapping the Brain to Recover from Chronic and Mysterious Illnesses. We're delighted to speak with Annie and find out more about limbic system impairment and retraining the brain. Welcome, Annie, to our podcast.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
How did you become involved in your work of retraining the brain?
Well, that's a really great question. And really, my entryway into the world of brain retraining and neuroplasticity was through my own suffering. My journey began in 2004. And at the time, I was a core belief counselor and journalist in Kelowna, BC. And my life was absolutely thriving. But looking back at it, I can see that I experienced what I call the perfect storm for developing limbic system impairment. And what I mean by that was, you know, various different toxic traumas that might affect brain function. So one of those was I had exposure to various toxins. So when I moved to Kelowna, there was a big wildfire. I don't know if you remember that, but a huge wildfire. So there was a dark black smoke, wildfire smoke in the air for a few weeks. So that was definitely part of the exposure piece. But I also worked in an office that was a very old building. And unfortunately, that building had mold in it. And also, what they didn't tell me when I rented the office is that my office was located right next to the janitor supply room. And I actually shared a wall with the janitor supply room, and I didn't have proper ventilation in that office. So I had a lot of exposures at once. So the smoke, the mold, the chemicals, the industrial chemical cleaners from the janitor supply room, and also, you know, when I opened my office, I painted it and put in new furniture and I had no idea, like everybody does, right? And I'm totally being exposed to all these VOCs that are off-gassing from new products and new materials. So I was working in that office for about 5 months. And over that time, I started to get symptoms, but I'll go back to the perfect storm again for a second. So prior to actually renting that office space, about 6 months earlier, I was in a car accident. And it wasn't that the impact of the car accident was that great, but it left me with cervical whiplash and a neurological shake in my neck that almost mimicked Parkinson's. And it was really strange. And I went to all kinds of specialists and they couldn't figure it out. Also, so, you know, you looking back at that. So you have toxic exposure from smoke, mold, chemicals, VOCs, plus a physical injury in my neck. And also, if I look back even further than that, I had a history of trauma growing up in childhood with an alcoholic father. So I think the protective circuits in my brain were firing just a little bit more rapidly than the average child because, you know, I felt unsafe a lot of the time. So I think it was that combination of traumas that actually led to limbic system impairment. So, you know, when I was looking at, when looking at the symptoms that I was having at the time, first of all, it started as chronic joint and muscle pain. Eventually I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, but of course the diagnosis didn't help me any. It was just a label to put on, you know, the symptoms. But yeah, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners will relate
I think a lot of our listeners are probably relating to many components of your story.
Oh, good, good. The other symptoms that I had constant muscle twitching, constant headaches that just would not go away. I was suffering from insomnia, anxiety, and then I started to develop this sensitivity to chemicals. And it didn't really dawn on me at the time that my sense of smell was changing. My favorite saying used to be, "That stinks. Can't you smell that?" I was like, oh my goodness. And it things that I used to enjoy, like perfume or, you know, bubble bath or any kind of things, scented products, were suddenly smelling like toxic bug spray. And it literally felt like I was being poisoned by my environment. And that started to get worse and worse. And the only thing that I could do at the time was really isolate myself as much as I could from having the exposures. And of course, that led to a lot of avoidance behaviors because I was really just trying to protect my health. Now, as you can imagine, along the way, I saw endless healthcare practitioners. I mean, all really well-intended people who were trying to help me.
Right.
And I saw lots of doctors and healthcare providers and people in mainstream medicine, alternative medicine, and beyond. And believe me when I tell you, I was an obedient patient. You know, at the time, the theory was toxic. What was it? Heavy metal toxicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the recommendation was to detox. Well, I detoxed to Mars and back, and it didn't help.
Right.
And no matter who I went to see, you know, I did the treatments religiously. And regardless of what it was, whether it was changes in diet or changes in, you know, chelation or detoxification or supplements or what have you, or, you know, psychology work and counseling work and whatever it is, you know, up the woohoo, I tried it and to Mars and back. And although some things seemed to help temporarily, I would always slingshot back into a cycle of chronic illness. And I was baffled. I was like, oh my goodness, the best specialists in the world that I know of are obviously not figuring this out.
And what are they missing?
there is something missing. And unfortunately, you know, as my symptoms got worse, and not only would I slingshot back into a cycle of chronic illness, but the symptoms were actually getting worse. So at this point, I've got fibromyalgia, chemical sensitivities, anxiety, depression. And, you know, the anxiety and depression, I don't think were there to begin with. I think it was a side effect of living your life that way. And of course, you know, when you're in chronic illness for that long, it's going to change the brain function and you're going to see anxiety and depression come up as well. But anyway, back to getting worse. So what happened is eventually I developed electric hypersensitivity syndrome, which I didn't even know existed. So what that meant was I started to become sensitive to electromagnetic fields that are found in things like cell phones and wireless and your computer and your electrical appliances. And I could only describe it as living a science fiction nightmare. That's really the only way to describe it. I could no longer just be in my own home because everything around me, I was starting to react to EMFs the same way as I was reacting to minute amounts of chemicals. So it became literally impossible for me to live in my own home. And that's when things really started to get scary, because I became homeless, and not for lack of money, but because my nervous system was so sensitized that I could no longer live in my home. So I started to camp and lived in a broken down houseboat for a while. But even prior to moving into the great outdoors, camping and living in the houseboat, I knew that there was something wrong with the way that my brain was processing information. And that's really where this whole thing started, was, again, my personal suffering was the catalyst for finding a solution. So that was the long answer to the question.
Well, and then also you followed your intuition and you knew something wasn't right, and you were curious and you kind of honed in that maybe it was related to something happening in your brain. So who were some of the scientists and doctors that inspired you as you started doing research on, you know, on the brain?
Yeah, thank you. Another really great question. First of all, I knew that there was an overlap between many different conditions, many chronic and complex health conditions, because, you know, even within the chemical sensitivity population, it was very rare for a person just to have chemical sensitivities, right? They would have chemical sensitivities and chronic pain issues and digestive issues and chronic fatigue syndrome and possibly, you know, chronic Lyme disease as well. So I started looking at brain research that really was a key for me in recognizing that the common denominator for a lot of these chronic illnesses was overactivation of certain areas of the brain that were located in the limbic system. It also made sense to me that my brain was involved, because I just knew that I wasn't processing sensory information anymore. I was like, why is it that somebody else can walk down the grocery aisle of a store and, you know, walk down the grocery aisle where they're, you know, the laundry detergent aisle, and be perfectly okay? And if I did that, I might go into central nervous system convulsions. I'm like, obviously there's something wrong with the way that my brain is processing. Excuse me. So again, I found a lot of research that pointed to the limbic system being a portion of that. And also it just made sense to me to start researching limbic system function, because the limbic system is the area for sense of smell, where sense of smell is processed in the brain. So logically, it just made sense to me to start looking at the limbic system. But I think a really big catalyst for understanding and exploring neuroplasticity is a potential cause and solution for the chronic illnesses that I was dealing with, was through reading the book, The Brain That Changes Itself by Dr. Norman Doidge.
Right.
And amazing book. And when I understood that my brain was not fixed and that I had agency to actually change the structure and function of my brain, it was such an aha moment. And I really looked at exploring the neuroplasticians who were featured in The Brain That Changes Itself. And this gave me great insight into what was happening in my own brain and how I could possibly go about making changes. So some of the scientists that were featured in there, my goodness, it's been so long, I can't remember all of them, but you know, one of them was Dr. R.S. Ramachandran, and he was working with how imagination could change brain function in his work with phantom limb pain. And then there was Dr. Pascal Lyonnais, who was exploring how the power of thought and how thinking alone can change the structure of the brain. Or I think there was another one about constraint-induced therapy, which is a form of rehabilitation for stroke patients, where specific repetitive exercises helps the brain to form new neural pathways. I think Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz was also featured in that. And Jeffrey Schwartz would work with patients who are suffering from OCD. And he connected how brain functions and symptoms of illness, and through awareness and distraction, he was able to help patients decrease symptoms. So really, I combined a lot of information that I was already working with, or skill sets that I already had through working as a core belief counselor, where I really looked at patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaviors that were leading to certain outcomes, and really incorporating some NLP techniques and the theories that were explored in The Brain That Changes Itself and applied that to myself. And the entire story of how I came up with the program and I developed the program and the science behind the program, of course, is detailed in my book that you already mentioned that I published in 2014 called Hardwired for Healing, Remapping the Brain to Recover from Chronic and Mysterious Illnesses. So really, I think one of the, again, coming back to the question, one of the bigger influences was Dr. Norman Doidge.
Absolutely. And so what kind of symptoms might indicate that a person has limbic system impairment? I know it probably is all over the place, but what are some of the symptoms that you've heard people talk about?
Well, the symptoms can vary from person to person, and I'm sure that's the case with a lot of your listeners. But really, they can express as seemingly unrelated symptoms, like unrelated physical symptoms or even emotional symptoms or psychological symptoms. Mm-hmm. But what people might notice are changes in autonomic nervous system function. So the automatic functions of your body, such as heart rate. So they might have tachycardia or breathing issues or digestion issues. Some people might feel fatigued, or they might be more sensitive to various different sorts of stimuli, like they could be sensitive to chemicals like I was, or sensitive to light or sounds or touch or food. Symptoms can also include brain fog, headaches, chronic pain, chronic inflammation, immune system conditions are common as well, irritability, anxiety, depression, and a lot more. I think if people are interested to see if they might be experiencing symptoms of limbic system impairment, I would suggest that they look at a self-assessment survey that is on the homepage of our website. And okay. It's a 20-question survey that they can actually go through, and it might help them.
Yeah, that's great. We'll post that link in our show notes for sure.
Yeah.
I've been doing the program, and I just really love hearing the testimonials from participants in the program. Can you paint a picture for our listeners just a little bit about what the practice might be like? I did my practice this morning at the beach.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's really an interesting question, one that's hard to answer because it's going to look different for different people. But yeah. I think when we talk about the practice, I would like to really elaborate on what the practice means. And I think it's really important for people to recognize that there are many different elements to the program, because a lot of times people might think that the practice involves just one of the pillars of the program, which is doing the DNRS retraining steps, but it actually includes five pillars of recovery. And we want to make sure that people are really looking at how they're implementing all five pillars of recovery on a daily basis. So I think I'd like to take a moment just to talk about the pillars of recovery so that can paint like a bigger picture of what's involved. So the first pillar of recovery is to really recognize the link between your brain and your condition. And we really go into that quite a bit in the instructional video program about the link between your brain and your condition, and really, you know, getting to the meat of the matter is in terms of limbic system impairment and how that might be contributing to the symptoms that you're having. In pillar two, we learn to recognize old neural pathways that keep us in a state of survival and learn to shift our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors to create new neural pathways. In pillar three, which some people refer to as a practice, that's really about learning the DNRS retraining steps that involve a step-by-step exercise that includes speech, movement, and visualization techniques. And the intention of this step is to really decrease firing of threat centers in the brain and change the brain chemistry from hormones that are associated with the stress response to hormones and neurotransmitters that are associated with the state of growth and repair. And the fourth pillar is something that we call incremental training. And this is really a desensitization technique where you challenge yourself in small increments to change the brain's patterned threat reaction to specific stimuli. And in pillar five, we learn the importance of elevating your emotional state. And this really helps to send a cue of safety to the brain and helps regulate the autonomic nervous system. So again, it's quite It's quite complex, and it's going to look different for different people. And again, I would suggest that if people are curious about, well, A, I would suggest that people do the program, but if they would like to have help in understanding the program or community support and how different people are applying the program, we have one of the ongoing support service offerings that we have. It's called Living DNRS, and that's where a group of peers will get together, and they're guided by one of our instructors and really examine how to apply the five pillars in their life, and also you get amazing ideas from other people about how they're applying all five pillars into their life as well.
That's great. Yeah, I love hearing some of the terminology you just brought up. And I am the kind of geek that loves to understand everything. But I think for me, sometimes that gets in my way because I feel like I have to understand everything for it to happen. And the reality is it just works. And so you don't always need to know, right? But I think as people with chronic illness, we've been seeking for so long answers that sometimes we get stuck in that. And it was actually a Thai massage therapist who said to me, you know, Sarah, people in Thailand don't know the names of any of the muscles. They just know how to heal the muscles. And I thought, oh, that's a really good point. So, you know, when things work, they just work.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true.
And sometimes needing to know everything can also get in our way. It can create another barrier.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes simple things really work. And it's not that the, you know, I always say that the brain is a pattern recognition organ, right? Mm-hmm. So if we look at it in that way, it actually makes things make a lot of sense. And mm-hmm. when you recognize that the brain has just been stuck in this fight, flight, or freeze response to no fault of your own, it's not your fault. And, it's not your fault, period, right? It's just not your fault. Your brain gets stuck in a trauma response. So, you know, the focus becomes how do we get the brain out of a trauma response? Rather than trying to figure out everything behind that or how it works, it's like just how do we get the brain out of a trauma response? How do we create that condition for the brain to actually shift gears? Mm-hmm. And it's as simple as that, really.
Right. Have mm-hmm. participants with Lyme disease experienced a reduction in symptoms? I know I have.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I would hazard to say that there are thousands of people that have with chronic Lyme disease that have experienced great reduction in symptoms. And I think that if people, two of my favorite stories, of course, are two of our certified DNRS coaches, Riley and Denicia. And their success stories are on our website. So if people want to look at more success stories or Riley and Anicia's success stories, they're on our website under success stories. But I would say thousands of people, because again, like I said, it's rare that people just have chronic Lyme disease.
Right.
I mean, you might be diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease, but really look at the symptoms that are common in a lot of other people that are suffering from limbic system impairment. And they'll be pleasantly surprised, or maybe not feel so alone, and recognize that there are other options available for addressing the brain portion of what's happening in chronic Lyme disease.
And then is retraining the brain helpful for people with symptoms of long COVID?
Yes. And, I was sitting back just kind of watching this whole COVID pandemic roll out. And I knew when I started to hear patients were suffering from symptoms of long COVID, I thought, oh, the limbic system is definitely involved. So, you know, over time, we started seeing people apply the program for symptoms of long COVID. And again, many, 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 many people have applied the program for long COVID and are experiencing great results. One person that comes to mind specifically is Sandra. She was a doctor who lives in Sweden, I think. Yeah. And Sandra was one of the first patients that was actually admitted into the long COVID clinic in Sweden. And she was suffering severe cognitive decline, so much so that she forgot how to write. She didn't know what letters meant anymore. She had postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, mast cell activation syndrome. She had headaches, vision issues, gut issues, brain fog. She was experiencing fatigue and weakness. She was actually confined to a wheelchair most of the time and could barely move. She had sensitivities to light, sound, and severe chemical sensitivities eventually. She also had numbness in her hands and face and had suffered from insomnia and had blood pressure issues. And she fully recovered within a few months of implementing DNRS.
That's amazing.
And she's back at work, leading a full life, and she's healthy and so pleased because now she can take care of herself and her daughter, her young daughter. So, yeah, it's quite amazing. So, again, there are success stories of people that have recovered from long COVID on our website. But also there are a number of people. We have an online forum called our Global Community Forum, which is a members-only, professionally moderated forum. And there are many people on the forum who are also recovering from some symptoms of long COVID. And for some people, COVID is the tip of the iceberg, or it's just one of the contributing factors of limbic system impairment. And it could have been the virus that threw the limbic system into this fight, or freeze response, or it could have been an accumulation of other things that were happening. But either way, yes, we've had great results with people with long COVID.
Right. And even just that constant state of fear was really disabling for most people.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not just, I mean, whether you've had the infection or not at this point, living in fear for 2 years, definitely has an effect on brain function.
And so is there any new research that you're excited about that you're following right now or that you're involved in?
Actually, the research is around long COVID. So we have two research studies happening right now. So researchers from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden are conducting a retrospective study on the effectiveness of DNRS on patients with severe symptoms of long COVID and postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. The study has not been published, but early findings are suggesting really great results. And the University of Alberta in Canada has applied for funding to conduct a clinical trial on the DNRS program to measure improvements in health-related quality of life in people with long COVID and chronic fatigue. We are very hopeful that both of these studies will move forward in good time, of course, because we know that there are millions of people who are needlessly suffering and are looking for effective treatments. So we're really hoping that that moves forward in a timely
fashion. Oh, that's exciting. Wow.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that on your website, too. Well, you
thank
know,
you.
So many people with chronic illness, they spend months and years trying to find answers. But you, Annie, like you just took it to the next level with your research. And I'm so thankful you did because so many people are benefiting from the results of your research and the program that you put together. And I'm just so inspired by your curiosity and your leadership in this field. And I really think everyone can benefit from limbic system retraining. So thank you for coming on our podcast and sharing your expertise with all of us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, Sarah. And I really hope that this is helpful for people that are listening. And just know that there is hope. And you're not alone. So thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Wow, that is remarkable to think of the brain as a pattern recognition organ. We can train our brains to decrease the firing of threat centers, and that changes hormones and neurotransmitters that lead to growth and repair. Take back the calm in your life. Thank you for listening. Stay safe in the outdoors.
And thanks to Looking at Lyme for that fascinating interview. You're listening to Speak Up, and it's been a pleasure to have you here for the past hour. Coming up in just a few moments is Democracy Now!, and later on we'll have Wandering Rhythms, music from around the world with host Nick Legacy coming up at noon. Alex Morris and Generic Alternative will be with us at 2 o'clock, and Typically Tuesday with Jade and Leslie up at 3 o'clock. Alanis Obama Swim Sawim, her exhibition at the Vancouver Art Gallery runs until August the 7th. So get down there and check it out. Speak Up will be back tomorrow with another episode. And host Vivian will be talking about the Willow Project here at SFU.